I despise your killing and raping. You're despicable.
Are you my judge?
It's just, you should be punished. I'm going to chop off your arm. So are you ready?
I'm certainly ready. Ready for another edition of Asian Cinema Fusion. Hi, I'm Paul Martinez and welcome. Sorry for the long break, but work got a bit busy and prevented me from taking the time to record a new episode. But we're here now and I'm back with four more films to speak about. We're going to start with Vengeance of an Assassin. This came out in 2014 out of Thailand, directed by the late Panavithikrai. Unfortunately, this would turn out to be the last film that he ever directed, as he passed away in the summer of 2014. You might know Pana from his work in the Bach films, Born to Fight, and BKO Bangkok Knockout, my nephew's favorite film. And the film stars Dan Chapong as Thee. He was the star of Born to Fight and the main villain in Ong Bak 3, also from Dynamite Warrior. Co-star Nanta Wuti Wunrapsak, who plays his brother Than. You might have seen him in Force of Five if you've seen that. Other people in the film, the girl Ploy, played by Nisa Chon Tuam Sung Nguyen, she's a relative newcomer. And then Ping Lupra Plong, who plays their uncle and I guess their guardian. So how can I describe this film in one sentence? I was thinking about this. An action-packed mess. A wonderful disaster. Look, Panna was never known to have the most well-thought-out plot lines in his films. But this makes me feel like this was not his completed work when he passed away. There's more holes in this plot than a 20-year-old pair of underwear. Some of it boggles comprehension. I still have no clue who hired Thee in the first place. I don't think it was ever explained. And was he hired to kill or protect Ploy, which I haven't heard anybody online really for sure take one side or the other on this. So again, this is just stuff that it's not just me that I'm not grasping, but you know, a lot of sites that I read after watching the movie also were a little sketchy on some of these details. But what is this film about? Well, two boys are brought up by their uncle after their parents were killed, but they never know why. One day, Thee, played by Dan Chapong, breaks into his uncle's private room to get answers. And once he does, he sets out to get justice for his parents' death. But taking this path winds up with him becoming an assassin somehow. And after a run-in with other assassins trying to kill a young actress who is a niece of a prominent businessman, Thee and the young girl wind up on the run. And they wind up back at his uncle's, where he, along with Thee's brother Than, set out to stop these killers, who, of course, also just happen to be the ones responsible for their parents' death. Now, believe me when I say this, I made that much more understandable than if you watched the movie. But let's talk about what's good with this film. And, of course, that is the amazing fight choreography. Amazing yet brutal fight scenes, including the only version of soccer that I would watch religiously. The gunfight scenes kind of right out of a video game, moving from first person to third person, shooter styles. Innovative, yes. I also kind of felt sometimes a little cheesy. I think I was a little on the fence with the way they worked out these gunfight scenes. But, you know, if I'm going to use the word cheesy, that should be where I talk about the special effects during a train battle scene, which was a great fight sequence up against a very fake-looking backdrop. which then concludes with one of the most contrived sequences ever put to celluloid. Yet somehow it works, which is the way Potter with the Cry is. You could pick apart his films all you want, yet they're still always enjoyable. Acting-wise, really the only person I felt who gave a half-decent performance was Ping Luplaplong as the drunken uncle. And while Nisa Chung, Tuomung Sing-Nuan, was extremely camera-friendly, most of her scenes were not very good, with maybe one exception being a scene where she and Than were out getting lunch, and she just came off really, not just cute in an attractive way, but almost genuine. I felt for some reason that scene showed a genuine personality from her, almost like she wasn't acting. I thought it was by far her best scene of the film. I mean, overall, I give this film a 5 out of a 10. There are so many negatives, yet if you love martial art films and crazy action, then you're probably going to enjoy this. You know, if the Ong Bak films you liked, if you liked Born to Fight, I love Born to Fight. I love BKO. And so I enjoyed the film. But on a technical level, there was a lot of flaws. And it made me really tough to score this. And I gave it a 5 out of 10. Just turn off your brain for 2 hours. Smile at the pretty pictures. And I guess if I needed that one sentence, it would be, it's great in its absurdness. Our second film, we're going to take a look at The Taking of Tiger Mountain, also for 2014, out of China, directed by Choi Hawk. Of course, the famous Choi Hawk, known for so many great films, Zoo, Warriors of the Magic Mountain, The Blade, the two Detective D films, Once Upon a Time in China, 1, 2, and 3, and I think 5. Film stars Zhang Hanyu as Yang Zhirong, who you might know from Bodyguards and Assassins, White Vengeance, Special ID. Tony Leung Ka Fai, he plays the main villain, Hawk. Of course, Ka Fai loves him in Prison on Fire, Ashes of Time, Election. Very well accomplished actor. If you don't know the name Tony Leung Ka Fai, there is another Tony Leung, but we're talking about Leung Ka Fai. He's a very, very accomplished actor. And I tell you, with the makeup and prosthetics, not very recognizable at all. When I first saw this film, I thought to myself, where is he? And then realizing who he was, he looks nothing like himself. Also, the film starts Li Gengjing, who he plays Captain Xiao Jambo. I don't know him. He was in the Young Detective D movie, which I didn't see. But very good actor from what I saw in this film. And I'm going to have to watch the Young Detective D film, because I'd like to see more of him. Somewhat cliche at times, but a fun ride from Choi Hawk. It's based on the novel Tracks in the Snowy Forest. It was a huge box office smash in China, over $110 million, making it one of the most successful films in history of China. Based loosely on actual events, the character Yang Zhirong, played by Zhang Hanyu, is actually a real person. The film was also released in 3D. It's a very stylized war film. But what's it about? I mean, besides saying a stylized war film. Well, it portrays a conflict between the People's Liberation Army facing off against a heavily armed and particularly nasty gang of bandits. Now, note, the gang outnumbers the POA about 1,000 to 30. And so these soldiers must use their guile and wits to outsmart and defeat their foes. Amidst the backdrop of a snow-covered mountain and the harsh winter, which leads to a lot of great visuals. Why is it cliche? Well, it just had all the elements I have seen in almost every war film. You know, the young orphan who becomes part of the hero's group. the young, attractive nurse, the one sole soldier who wears glasses and has a heart of gold, the overly stern leader, and of course, the X-Factor soldier who does things his own way. Add to that, you know, an over-the-top baddie. And, well, you see where I'm going. I mean, that's all the elements you see of these type of films. But this film benefits, as I said, from some great visuals, very clever action choreography. Choi Hawk is known as the master at this, and he retains that honor here. The story bordered on getting too complex for the type of film that we are viewing, but luckily never crossed that line of being convoluted. There was a bit of eyebrow-raised fare with the young character's mother being kept as a sex slave for some reason. But I'm going to forgive the contrivedness of this element. You know, all these films always seem to have this random connection that makes absolutely no sense. But still, like I said, it's a beautifully shot film. Choi Hawk really does some nice innovative shots. And, you know, I didn't see this film in 3D. I know when the theaters, it was released as a 3D film. But I didn't feel, as I do with many 3D films, like there was these 3D-rific scenes. There might have been one early on that I caught. But for the most part, you could just watch it as a regular film. And it didn't seem like it was too gimmicky on the 3D element, which I just hate. The acting was solid throughout the cast, but it's Zhang Hanyu who really shines as the POA spy hiding amidst the crazed enemies. As I said, Li Gengzhen also turns in a fine performance as Captain Zhao, who leads his company in this seemingly impossible mission. But as I said, what really carries this film is the amazing battle scenes. Of course, it's a bit Hollywood, as I said. From my account, I think only two PLA men lose their lives while wiping out hundreds of bandits. So, but again, you know, that's movies. Overall, a fun popcorn type of film. Lots of explosions, cool camera shots of guys getting their heads shot off, and fast-talking spies. I definitely think, well, not a must-see, it's a should-see. Enjoy the ride. I gave it a 7 out of 10, and I really do feel that the Taking of Tiger Mountain was better than I thought it would be going in. Check it out. It's definitely worth watching. Well, now we're going to go to our old school selection of the show. And this time, we're going to go with Shogun Assassin. 1980, Japan. It's a Japanese film that was, you know, was basically edited by Americans for an American audience. Now, Robert Houston is the guy responsible for that. He made a lot of films that didn't do very popular. The Legacy of Rosa Parks gained him some notoriety. But the actual core content was directed by Kenji Musumi, who directed about a half dozen of the Zaoichi films. Starring Tomasaburo Wakayama as the Lone Wolf. You might also know him from The Bad News Bears Go to Japan. He was also in the Michael Douglas film Black Rain. Akihiro Tomikawa as Daigoro, the son, or the cub to the Lone Wolf. And Kayo Matsuo as the Supreme Ninja. Now, this is one of the most well-known yet most controversial films by fans ever. Before my detractors scream bloody murder and remove me from their podcast cues, give me a second to explain. I review this film in a way to kind of set the record straight to all fans of the genre who may not understand the connection to this film and to the Lone Wolf and Cub films. As I said, this is a show I do for the new fans who are just really getting introduced to Asian cinema. And this is an important film. Now, Shogun Assassin is actually a film made up of two different films edited together and redubbed in English. It takes 12 minutes of Lone Wolf and Cub Sword of Vengeance, which was the very first of the Lone Wolf and Cub series. The rest of the film comes from the second film in the Lone Wolf and Cub series, which is Lone Wolf and Cub Baby Cart at the River Styx. Now, why was this done? Well, the producers and the director felt that they could make it more quote-unquote American-friendly by bypassing a lot of the backstory, focusing on the bloodletting, and giving it an English track, because at the time, American movie makers thinking that there's no way that anyone would, American audience anyway, would sit around and watch a film in another language, of course. Well, you know that's not true. And you could argue the point, and many have. But in the end, the popularity of Shogun Assassin has proven that in some way they were right. Now, I'm not here to tell you Shogun Assassin is better than watching the two original films separately. It's really a different film, despite using the same footage. Watching the original two films in its original language and watching Shogun Assassin are really quite different. And what is the film about, for those who have not been experienced any of this? Well, try to make a long story short. A samurai executioner is marked for death by his ever-maddening, paranoid shogun. But instead, his wife is murdered. The man, now known as Lone Wolf, takes off on his own with his son in tow, batting assassins along the countryside, and geysers of blood ensue. Now, I cannot really speak to the acting in this film. I have talked about this with many, but I feel in order to judge acting ability, you need to hear that person's voice, not a dubbed actor. You can get some type of sense from facial expressions, but not enough. The inflections in a voice can bring about much emotion from the viewer as to the believability of a performance, even if you don't understand the language. This is my take. I have had this discussion with many. This is my opinion. I do not feel I can honestly judge a person's acting unless I'm hearing them act in their native language. Now, the martial arts scenes. Much like most classic samurai films, you know, we spoke about Yojimbo in our last episode, they may come off a bit dated by today's standards, but what they lack in choreography, they make up for in ingenuity and brutality. And this was truly a trendsetter in these Lone Wolf and Cub films. You know, this is where you start really seeing a lot of the geysers, as I said, of blood, the blood shooting out of the corpses and what have you. And this was something which wound up becoming major in many films following these films, and became kind of a staple, if you will, in Japanese martial arts, and in some Chinese martial art films as well. But this is one of the first places where it was really notable. That's for another reason why Shogun Assassin is just such a groundbreaking film. But when I think of this film, what its finest element is the wonderful, in its campiness, of the narration by Dagoro. Now, Dagoro, as I said, is the son, the small boy, who is, you know, with his father, being attacked by ninjas. Now, this was voiced by 7-year-old Gibran Evans, and lines like his brains was infected by devils, or I guess I wish it was different, but a wish is only a wish. These are lines that have become a part of pop culture. In fact, the Wu-Tang Clan's DZA used many lines from this film when producing fellow bandmate GZA's solo album Liquid Swords, which, side note, this happens to be one of my favorite rap albums of all time. So, I really felt, and I think if you talk to any old-time fans of Shogun Assassin, they love the narration that goes on to the film from the young boy, even some of Lone Wolf's lines as well. So it's a film that is very different, because in what makes a lot of films, you know, maybe a lot of hardcore fans like myself try to catch films in their native tongue with subtitles because we feel that's maybe more of a real showing of the film. Shogun Assassin, totally different. Shogun Assassin is an Americanized splicing of some Japanese films, but to me, done quite well. And, you know, that's the story of Shogun Assassin. Now, you have a choice. You can see this film, or you can seek out the original works. There are, in fact, 6 Lone Wolf and Cub films altogether. Or you could see both. Now, I would take option 3, but that's just me. I gave this a lot of thought. I give this film a 6 out of 10. But that score is derived by its historical significance rather than by just its content. Because you have to understand, this film is many people's opening film into martial arts. There's many people who first saw Shogun Assassin and then became fans of the genre, where they wanted to see more samurai films or more martial art films. And it's because of that, it's a very important film. And if you're a fan of the old campy dub martial art films of the 70s, you're going to love this. Trust me. So yeah, 6 out of 10 is what I'm giving it. Again, don't kill me, hardcores. I know a lot of the hardcores do not like Shogun Assassin. I've heard so many that gets butchery of the great Lone Wolf and Cub films, and I'm not going to make that argument. There's many out there that can make it for me. I don't look at this film that way. I look at it on its own. And on its own, it's an important film, which is why we talked about it. And now we're going to talk about our wild card film. And the movie I watched for the show this time was a movie called Doomsday Book. This was made in 2012 out of Korea. Directed by Kim Ji-woon, who known for A Bittersweet Life, I Saw the Devil, and if you saw Arnold Schwarzenegger's comeback film, The Last Stand, that was directed by Kim Ji-woon. Also was directed by Yim Pil-sung, who you might know from Antarctic Journal. This is maybe the only thing I've seen him do before this. Now, this is an anthology film with 3 separate tales, loosely about the end of days. And the film takes 3 separate views, yet all 3 have a slight tinge of comedic value to them, some more than others. First tale is called Brand New World, and it stars one of my favorite actors, Ryu Sungbum, who plays a Sukwoo. You might know him. We just talked about him on our last episode. He was the star of The Unjust. Also, Arahan, The Berlin File. He's just a tremendous actor. And his co-star in this is Go Joon-hee, who plays Kim Yoo-min. Only thing I really know her to be in is a film called The Red Carpet. Basically, what the film is about is a geeky lab assistant gets infected in a zombie holocaust. Not much else to say. I mean, that's not really much more about what the film is about. It's an outstanding performance by the 2 lead actors. And while it is a zombie outbreak story, it is extremely lighthearted, kind of a romantic backdrop. Best part of this is the showing of the media's coverage of the outbreak, including a surreal discussion panel, which just goes off on a weird tangent. I gave this part of the film 6 out of 10. I felt a little hanging at the end of it. I felt almost like this needed another 10 minutes or something. I just felt it just ended in a weird place. But still enjoyable. And I love zombies, so, you know, you had me on zombie. The second tale is called The Heavenly Creature. Now, this is a very complex story. Think of this as a bit different take on The Terminator. In that film, The Terminator, machines gain sentience and declare war on humanity. But what if instead the machines gained enlightenment and learned the teachings of Buddhism, and so were not violent at all, but were, you know, they were all about the self-discovery and not about annihilation. And again, so it's a very different take about kind of the same thing, about machines gaining sentience. And that's what this story really delves into. It's very deep. Very deep film. It's basically about a service robot in a Buddhist monastery who becomes enlightened, and now its creators feel that these robots are need to be destroyed because they're a danger of taking over and replacing humanity. And the robot basically trying to explain that that's not who he is. And there's a lot of talking. There's really not any action. But if you really take the time to sit there and listen to what is being said back and forth, it's very, very interesting stuff. Like I said, very deep. Kim Kang-woo is excellent here as he plays a technician who is sent to find out if the robot was just malfunctioning. I think of the three stories in here is definitely the one that is most talked about. Definitely you can watch it with some friends, and I'm sure you guys can conversate for hours. I know me and my good friend did when we saw the film together at the New York Asian Film Festival a couple years ago. So I gave this part 7 out of 10. Now the final tale of this trilogy is named Happy Birthday. Now this is my favorite of the three stories, as it's easily the funniest. Now, a young girl breaks her father's 8-ball from his pool table. And 2 years later, the Earth is about to be destroyed by a meteor. Now, how do these two things connect? Well, that's the story to be told here. And as I said, just imagine the world has less than a day. What would the news report be like? What would be shown in the home shopping networks? This is laugh out loud stuff. Very, very funny. I gave this part 7.5 out of 10. I saw this. I laughed hysterically in the theater. The whole theater laughed hysterically throughout this scene. And I thought, when I saw it at the festival, this was the crowd's favorite part of the film. It was my favorite part. And I rewatched it, you know, for doing this podcast, and found myself chuckling hysterically through the news report scenes in this film again. Now, overall, this is a very quirky yet fun film. I give the entire thing a 7 out of 10. Again, I wouldn't say it's a must-see, but a should-see. But again, this is very different now. This is, you know, there's very little action. Even the zombie part, in the first part, there is a little bit of violence, as we can get from zombies. But this is not an action film at all. This is, I guess, a part comedy and part drama. So it's a little bit of a different film. So if you're looking for action, you may be disappointed. This is, if you're looking to get a good laugh, or maybe you want to think about a little bit about life and what it means, then this could be a film that you really enjoy. Like I said, it gets a little silly at the beginning, gets very deep in the middle, and then just gets really funny at the end. So overall, I really enjoyed this film. You can find this. Wellgo released this on Blu-ray and DVD. So you can find this film very, very inexpensive if you look around. I believe I got my copy for almost nothing on eBay. That's our show. Those are the four films we talked about. I hope you enjoyed the four films. And if you haven't seen them, I hope I gave you something to watch. If you have, well, maybe the next time we'll give you something that you haven't seen. But I will be back to talk a lot in the next month as the New York Asian Film Festival is coming into town. As I record this, I am anxiously awaiting for the lineup to be announced. It's any day now. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. I made a bet with my friend that tomorrow will be the day that the lineup is announced. And I will be talking about the films that I see at the festival. Last year, I was able to see, I believe, 11 films or 12 films at the festival. I hope to do that many, if not more, this year. And I will review every one of them on this podcast for you guys. Should be some, hopefully, some world premieres. Hopefully, some North American premieres. Always very exciting. Ringo Lam, Aaron Kwok, both going to be in attendance at the festival this year. And they're both receiving awards. So that's going to be great fun to hopefully get to see both of them. I'm going to let you guys know about it. I'm also going to try to get, I did speak to one of the directors of the festival about maybe getting a quick little interview with them. Letting them talk about what the festival is, what it means, how it came about. And maybe I'll bring that to you guys if I'm able to get it. I don't want it. These guys are very busy. And I don't want to take too much of their time. I'm hoping just to get them to speak to me for maybe 5-10 minutes. If I get that much out of them, I would be ecstatic. Just to get a little bit of what the festival was about, how it came about, and, you know, stuff like that. A couple of questions I'll ask. If there's any questions as you're reading this that you'd like me to ask them about the New York Asian Film Festival, please drop me questions in the comments section, and I will ask if I'm able to get them to do this. I was told that he would make some time for me, but like I said, I'm not going to hold him to it. They are very busy guys. They're great guys. Some of the greatest people I've ever met, and they love Asian film as much as we all do. Because if you're listening to this podcast, you love it as much as I do, and believe me, these guys love it as much as all we do. It's a labor of love for them. I am so thankful that they do it. And I'm so thankful to be a part of it. I wish I could do more for them. But, I mean, just the fact that I'm there every year and I patronize it, I guess, is my small role to play. And I'd like to spread the word about it. I try to spread the word about the festival constantly on social networking, on Kung Fu Cinema forums. And so you'll probably see me around those places constantly talking about this festival. It's a very important time of the year for me. It's probably the most excited I get in the entire year. And so I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, every film that I see at the festival, I will review for you guys on this podcast. So get prepared to hear my voice a little more frequently than you have the last month or so. And that's our show. Thank you for listening and tuning in. I hope you're back with me for the next episode. And later too, then, bye-bye.